This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Today is the 47th anniversary of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy.
In downtown Dallas, President Kennedy was shot today just as his motorcade left downtown Dallas. Mrs. Kennedy jumped up and grabbed Mr. Kennedy. She cried, "Oh no." The motorcade sped on. A photographer said he saw blood on the president's head. It was believed two shots were fired.
On that day in 1963, five Secret Service men were assigned to protect the president and his motorcade. And for nearly the past half century, those security agents have remained silent about the horror they experienced that afternoon. But now they've broken their silence. Gerald Blaine was part of the so-called Kennedy detail, and he's written a new book about what he and the other agents protecting the president went through that day, and also in the decades following JFK's death. That book is called The Kennedy Detail. Gerald Blaine joins me in the studio. I'm also joined by Clint Hill, who was also assigned to protect JFK and who was interviewed extensively in the book. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
Why at this point, so many decades later, why tell that story now?
Well, we really wanted to set the record straight. The conspiracy theories have grown so much that many of the agents who passed away were accused of being part of a conspiracy or accidentally shooting the president or the driver turning around and shooting the president. There are not many of us left anymore. We felt it was time to put the facts out as witnessed by ourselves, and nobody was closer to it than Clint. So that's why we came out now.
And Jerry Blaine, you are the co-author along with a writer who helped you. Clint, you are someone who shared your story as part of this book. So let's talk about that day. Let's talk about November 22nd, 1963. One of the great tragedies of that day, one of many tragedies of that day, was that initially that limo was going to be covered, not open air. Is that right?
That car has a number of tops. A solid top, bubble top, and you can take the bubble top off, so it's open. On that day, the decision was made based on the fact that there was no inclement weather. It had been drizzling and raining. If that had continued, the bubble top would have been on. But since it did not, it cleared up. The decision was made there would be an open car. Now, understand that the bubble top is plexiglass. It was not bulletproof. There was no bulletproof material in that entire car.
And Clint Hill, you were the Secret Service agent riding on the car immediately behind the presidential limo.
That's correct. I was on the left side of the follow-up car, which follows immediately behind the presidential car.
And Jerry Blaine, where were you?
I had worked midnights that night in Fort Worth, and we'd flown to Austin, so I was in a hotel in Austin and been asleep about 5 minutes when we were notified the president had been shot.
Clint Hill, can you tell us, at that point that day, at what point did you know that something was going wrong?
We had come from Love Field in Dallas and had a long motorcade down Main Street where the crowds were very, very dense. Love Field was the airport of arrival. There had been about 5,000 people there to greet the president. When we got to the end of Main Street, we turned right onto Houston Street, and to our left was an open area called Dealey Plaza, in which there were very few people. And I had previously been up on the back of the car about five times on Main Street because the car was traveling on Main Street closer to the left-hand side of the street, which puts Mrs. Kennedy, who was my primary responsibility, closer to the people on the left than the president was on the right. When we got to Houston, there were no people, very few. So I got back onto the follow-up car.
You said you had jumped onto the car in front, I think, as you put it, a few times. Is that because there were things that happened that made you think that could be a person who's a threat, I need to step on the car?
I wanted to be in close proximity to Mrs. Kennedy for fear that somebody, because of how close the people were to her, would throw something or do something that could harm her, and I didn't want that to happen.
You say in the book that The scene when there was a motorcade like this where the president was there was crazy, in your words. You say that people would literally jump out of the crowd, race toward the limo, and throw themselves at the car. Now, these are just fans. These are just people who adore the president.
That's correct.
But for you, every person is a potential threat.
Absolutely. No matter what, you must be diligent and be very aware of every movement that's going on. And people do just go toward the president. They're just drawn to him, and they try to get as close to him as they can.
And actually, both of you say that President Kennedy often wanted that. He wanted you to back up so he could be closer to the people. And that was difficult for Secret Service agents.
That was his political style. That's how he was elected. And President Kennedy, the first 3 years, essentially, was tied up in the Cold War, with the Bay of Pigs invasion, with the Cuban Missile Crisis, with the Berlin blockade. And he was elected to bring a civil rights bill in, and he had not traveled south to deal with the public there. This was the first venture into the South for the president, other than greeting the Bay of Pigs prisoners in Miami a year before that. So he felt that he was going to have to resort to his political style of getting out and being with the people, let the people see him, and that's what he did.
Did that leave the two of you with a sense of discomfort that he wasn't as protected as you might have liked him to be?
We always like to remain in extremely close proximity to the person you're protecting, and when they ask you to back off sometimes, you're very hesitant to do so, and sometimes you don't do it. We don't always do what the president tells us to do. We have to use good judgment and decide when it's proper to do that and when it's not proper to do that.
So, Clint Hill, you left off telling us about November 22nd, 1963, as that presidential limo was approaching the highway.
Well, at that particular time, there was nobody up on the back of the car.
No agent.
No agent, nobody. And there was an explosive sound from my right rear. I'd been looking to my left at Dealey Plaza, where there were some people but very few. When I heard the explosive noise from my right rear, I scanned from my left to my right, and in so doing, my eyes went across the back of the car. I saw the president grab at his throat and lurch slightly to his left, and I knew something was wrong. So I jumped off the follow-up car and ran toward the presidential vehicle. By the time I got there, apparently another shot had been fired, but I did not hear it because I was running. Just before I got to the car, his head exploded from a shot, and there was brain matter and blood all over myself and the car. I tried to get up on the back of the car. At that time, the driver accelerated. The car jumped forward slightly, and I slipped. I regained my foothold and got back up in the car. About this time, Mrs. Kennedy came out of the seat and was coming up on the trunk, and it appeared that she was reaching for something that had come off the president's head to the right rear of the car. She was not aware that I was even there. When she came up on the back of the car, I grabbed her as best I could and put her back into the seat and lay up on top of the back of the seat to cover her, the president, governor, and Mrs. Connolly. The president had fallen to his left into Mrs. Kennedy's lap. The right side of his head was exposed and his eyes were fixed. I could see that there was a hole in the upper right above his right ear, about the size of my palm, and a great deal of the brain material had been removed and was scattered about the car along with the blood in over the entire rear of the car. I turned and gave a thumbs down to the follow-up car because it was a fatal wound. Then I noticed that Governor Connolly moved slightly, and I could see that he was covered in blood, so I knew he'd also been shot. The car accelerated. We went past the lead car, hollering at them to get us to a hospital because we didn't know the name of the hospital. We knew there was one in the area. And they raced forward and took us to Parkland Hospital.
Clint Hill, do you remember what you were thinking when all this happened?
Not much time to be thinking. It's more just strictly reaction. And I guess the thought was, how the hell did this happen?
Jerry Blaine, you weren't there, but you got news fairly quickly about what had happened.
we got word that the president had been shot, but we were told to go to the local Air Force base, and we caught a Strategic Air Command tanker, and not a word was said all the way back, and we didn't find out until we landed at Andrews Air Force Base that he was dead.
Jerry Blaine, there's a point in the book where you say that as a result of Kennedy's death, for the rest of their lives, these Secret Service agents would be defined by the assassination of JFK, questioned and blamed for failing to achieve the impossible.
Well, I think the failure that we talk about there was our individual failure. There are not many jobs in the world that you can be 100% failure, and we failed that day. And the strange thing is that we never discussed the assassination after that day with each other. We immediately were thrown in to work with the new president, and the workload increased, and we just didn't have time to deal with it, and we just lived with it. We remained silent.
No trauma counseling, just you dealing with it on your own.
Yes, every person. And it impacted every agent, even agents who had served him for about 3 months right after the inauguration and went back to the field, were all impacted the same.
When you say that you were blamed for failing to achieve the impossible, do you mean to say that in retrospect you think nothing could have prevented that death that day?
No, you know, it was a different organization in those days. There were never more than 5 agents with the president at any one time. 2 months before the assassination, we had 11 experienced agents that went back to the field. Clint and I had been on the detail since President Eisenhower. We were shorthanded. 5 agents, and if people look at the Zapruder film running in real time, this happened in less than 6 seconds. Even if we saw a gunman, our job was not to go after the gunman. Our job was to screen the president.
Much of this book is about the toll that this assassination took on all the agents who were involved. The toll to your psyche, the emotional toll, the toll on your families. And as you said, it really had to be suppressed. Can you talk a little bit about what that's been like? How do you live with that, something that you've witnessed, the gore and everything that came with it?
It's very difficult, very emotional. I suffered, I had nightmares for years. I still have occasional nightmares, but it's much better today, 47 years later, than it was the first 25 years, believe me. I never discussed what happened with my family at all, my wife or kids. Never have. The first time I've really discussed it is with Jerry Blaine for this book. Now, I've been interviewed by 60 Minutes. I've been interviewed by Larry King. But I've never really talked in depth about this the assassination until this book.
Jerry Blaine, you talked about how part of what motivated you to do this was finding what I think you called these preposterous conspiracy theories. I think that was your word, preposterous. Or you do address the Warren Commission in the book. This is the commission that said one gunman, Lee Harvey Oswald. The two of you believe the Warren Commission. Is that
right?
Yes.
Definitely.
Very much.
Why no doubt?
Just having dealt with people like Lee Harvey Oswald, who had an identity crisis, who had been a failure at everything he had attempted, and who had taken a shot at the National Guard General, General Walker, in Dallas a couple of weeks before the assassination, and the bullet was fired by the same rifle that killed John F. Kennedy.
For me, it's a matter of they've never proved otherwise. And I've been back to Dealey Plaza now at different times and gone up to the 6th floor where the shooter was located. And it was no question in my mind that Lee Harvey Oswald was that shooter.
Jerry Blaine, you mentioned in the book that I think just about 2 years ago, in 2008, you had gone to a presidential rally. You wanted, I believe, to sort of see the security situation. I think you wanted to see how it had evolved. And you said that you were stunned by the sheer magnitude of the security. The security
I was
that
overwhelmed
existed.
by that. Clint mentioned, I think, when he joined, there were about 276 agents, and I was with a group that took it up to 300 agents. Our budget was about $4.5 million in 1963. Today, there are about 3,500 agents. Their budget is $1.4 billion. But any agent who has worked security will tell you the president today is just as exposed as President Kennedy was.
Jerry Blaine and Clint Hill, thank you for talking about this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The president's body, with the police motorcycle escort, is now pulling away from the hospital. It is about 1.5 hours since he was shot. The president has been dead for about 1 hour and 7 minutes. Vice President Lyndon Johnson, who is now constitutionally the president, left immediately after the president's death was confirmed, and with a peace escort, went off to the airport, presumably to go straight to Washington to assume the constitutional responsibilities of the president.
Coming up, to scan or not to scan. Travelers flying this Thanksgiving will have to choose between a body scan or a pat-down. More on that controversy ahead. Stay with us. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.